Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Smell Podcast. I'm your host, Katie Boateng. This week, join me in listening to an episode with Toby Fife, an artist who is currently living in Hawaii. Toby and I chat about his time living abroad, the accident that led him to becoming an acquired anosmic, and much more. I'd like to apologize for the quality of the audio on this episode, as there are some background noises that I do hope don't take away too much from the content of the conversation. Our interview was recorded in September 2020. Let's listen to the interview. Hi, Toby. Welcome to the Smell Podcast. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thanks. How are you?
I'm doing really well. Thank you. I'm excited to speak with you. To get started, can you please tell us a little bit about yourself? Where are you from and where do you currently live?
Great. I'm originally from San Francisco, and I think third generation. My grandparents were born there and settled from Europe. I have a very large family. Some of my uncles were, my great uncles were monks and making wine for the Christian Brothers Winery up in Napa when I was a kid. And so I grew up with this all of these great large dinners. We would make homemade ravioli once a year and freeze it and have it for Christmas and the rest of the year. And also I have a Norwegian grandmother who ate a lot of sweets, so I was surrounded by a pretty good amount of food. I don't know.
That sounds nice. That sounds like a good childhood.
Yeah, I miss all that. I miss that a lot, especially the food.
Yeah, and where are you currently located?
Oh, sorry. Yeah. I took a trip around the world after I entered art college, and then worked in the industry for a little while. And then I got a job offer for a summer. I think I was teaching a wood shop up in Oregon at the Oregon School of Arts and Crafts, and I've kind of had that it was just kind of a natural approach to helping people. And so after that I was contracted for some other work, and then after 9/11, the recession, I got a free offer for a free flight and a free apartment, and pretty much set up to teach to integrate the arts in the ESL. So I took that. I thought I'd be out there for a year. And I jumped over to South Korea, and I really liked the culture and the food. And then I ended up being out there for 20 years. I lived and worked in Japan and India, Thailand, and China. So I recently got back a couple of years ago from that. I'm still a resident of San Francisco, now in Hawaii. And the reason why I came to Hawaii was because I had an accident. That's where we're getting into the being anosmic. Should I go on, I guess?
Yeah, please do. So, yeah, so it sounds like you're a world traveler, which is pretty cool. And you traveled around quite a lot, and now you're currently in Hawaii. So, yes, right. Next, could you kind of share with us your anosmia story? What happened?
Okay. It was quite a great experience. I highly recommend leaping abroad and getting out. I visited every Asian country, and then my last contract was in China, and I was just ending a contract, and I was riding one of those foot electric scooters, and the stand-up scooters with the little handlebars, and I was putting back and work from my art loft and to school, and then one night I hit a pothole, fell right into it, woke up in the hospital 5 days later. Someone took me there. They said it was a taxi. And I woke up in the hospital completely just brain dead. I was just going back to my notes because at that time I reconnected with my family. We haven't spoke for quite a while, being out there for 20 years. And I told everybody I was in the hospital, and I was told in the hospital I was going to have brain surgery. It was pretty dramatic for me. I was like, I've been on this, some of the Facebook pages on anosmia, and there's a lot of people that either had similar head injuries, but not as severe as mine. I was pretty blacked out, and I was flat on a bed. I couldn't move my head. It felt like a ton of bricks And so it was just, I thought I was just gonna, I don't know, wasn't gonna make it. So, but
Right.
they told me, yeah, they told me they were gonna shave my head and cut open my brain and take the, I had a blood clot. They said the size of a pea, I guess. It's pretty big. and it was, I was in so much pain. I was noticing after I was in the hospital for 5 weeks, I was losing a lot of weight. I was hooked up on IVs. And I've had, I think, half a dozen, maybe even more MRIs during that whole time, because they just, it was the worst experience of my life. Not just the trauma, but the environment. In
Right.
China, it was a public hospital, and it was not clean, and the nursing staff were all high school students in training, and so they didn't know what they were doing, and they were giving me infections all the time on my IV and my arms. And then I finally told them, "Oh, forget the arms, because I got infections on both arms." And I said, "Start putting your IV somewhere else." So they did.
Wow.
So I was on an IV being fed with something to keep me alive for 5 weeks. And then I started to get up a little bit. I never had the operation because the insurance wouldn't cover it. So, but they covered everything else, and a pretty nice package to relocate here. I came here a year ago, ironically, from that, after the treatment. Wasn't much treatment. I don't know what they were doing, but
Right, but
they just
getting you
told me to
stable
lie down.
enough to be able to come
Right.
back.
Yeah, right. It was, I never thought I've had such a, I would ever have a disability. I call it a disability. It's not as transparent, but invisible. And I also lost my sense of taste after that. And, or, you know, and it, I asked the doctors there, and it just, they didn't know. They refused to even answer. So I had a really hard time. But when I left left the contract, the teaching contract out there, and they gave me a nice severance, and the insurance paid for my relocation here. But that was over a year ago, and I flew in on the 4th of July, and it was just perfect. It's the perfect place to be, especially now during a pandemic in Hawaii, because it's so calm and full of nature.
So yeah, kind of with that in mind, like after you had this trauma and then you had the experience of having to wait to be stable enough to come back to the USA,
Right.
kind of how did you realize or at what moment did you realize that you had lost your sense of smell and taste?
Well, I realized that in the hospital when I was just getting up, you know. And I kept asking, "What's going on?" And they wouldn't tell me. And so I had to do my own research. And I was just looking at some notes. I was talking to with my mother. We were connected on LinkedIn, and so we were communicating every day. And she was telling me, give me a thumbs up and a chip on my shoulder and things, just to keep me going. And it was depressing, more so after I came here. Because I couldn't smell the ocean or taste the salt on a margarita or something. It was pretty drastic losing. Yeah, I lost a lot of weight within a year. I wasn't eating, but there was another accident, kind of. I couldn't find work after I spent my severance here, so I flew back to China. I have these air miles, and so I just keep using my air miles. And for just to survive, and this was before the pandemic, and this was last August. So I flew back to Beijing. I'd never been there, and this was, and I was ending. I was working there for a few months, and I didn't have a work permit yet, so I had to fly to Bangkok, which was closer, and I've also know the roundabouts of getting a work visa in Thailand for China and other countries. But long story short, I didn't get paid, and so I had to knock on the door at the embassy. So the Beijing job didn't pay me, and I got stranded. So they flew me to Kansas City. I've never been there. A friend of mine got me an art residency kind of situation. And then I did some artwork and trade for some free lodging, and also made some, I was handed some chairs to paint some chairs, and those got stolen. And then I applied for a grant with the Crafts Emergency Relief Fund. And they offered to help me to get back into understanding and get some medical treatment on the anosmia and agousia, I guess you call it agousia, what you can't taste. Yeah. But I actually had to use that to relocate back to San Francisco because that's the only resource I know for medical. So when I came back to San Francisco, I hooked up with the Zuckerberg Hospital, which is the free city hospital for a lot of people. And so they were going to start some treatment, but this was right before the pandemic, right before the city shut down in March. And February, they started scheduling a nutritionist with the ENT, the ENT doctor was not very friendly. She didn't even believe that I couldn't smell or taste, and she must get these a lot. I don't know, but
or, yeah, especially now with the pandemic, I think the but number now, of people, yeah,
but now people are yeah, but now people are actually believing it because of the symptoms that people are having now with COVID. So, yeah, and then I was funded again with some other grants, and I just saved all that, and I just took my last free air miles and took a one-way trip back here right when the city shut down, right after that. And that it really helps being in an isolated, quiet, natural environment with nature, birds, and so I'm just was received just a few days ago another grant for a project to build some artwork related to these senses, and that's kind of what I'm going to be working on now. And I've been doing a lot of research. And there's a huge industry for I was trying to stay away from the anosmia research and getting more into the art related and what people are doing. And there's a huge industry, I mean, the perfume industry, you know, with smells. And so I found all these great links and websites, All Sense and Scent Culture and Scent Week magazine. So I just been researching what other artists are doing. And there is a huge movement with right now with multi-sensory art, you know, where participants can engage with all your senses in an art form. And so I'm focusing on creating work funded by UCLA and the California Arts Council for being anosmic and creating new work around our senses, but in a more, not so much like the smell organ, like back in the 20s or 1870s, I think some artists invented the smell organ, where instead of playing the organ where you could hear it, it would perfume the environment with different notes.
That's interesting.
It's great being an artist. You kind of find through history. I love history, and I love reading. So I'm often reading all these abstracts and things on academia. And I think I'm going to be starting with smell wheels. A lot of artists use that, smell mapping. And that's kind of related to design thinking and how other artists kind of lay out a project, whether it's a color theory or something. So, but smell mapping and color wheels are similar to Our smell wheels are similar to a color wheel, where the colors kind of relate to different parts of the senses. And so I'm starting with that, but more focused on texture, because I want people to actually see the texture and feel the texture of the work. That's kind of related. If you're listening to this and driving, don't do this exercise. But close your eyes and you can imagine what this. Because I'm anosmic, I can't smell, but through memory, I can kind of remember what the beach smells like. And memories, you know, it's always there. So, and I think that's our first sense is smell when we're born, is what I found out. I can't remember. It could be touch. But so anyway, so that's what I'm going
to. Well, that's fascinating. It sounds like you're using something negative that has happened to you, but using it in a creative way, in a way that makes sense to you, since you are a creative person, to come up with like new art interpretations, which sounds really interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
So another question that I'd like to talk with you about is actually your relationship with food and eating. So
great.
How has your relationship with food and eating changed since you've become an osmic?
Well, I wasn't eating when this all started. And it was depressing to eat. And I was also, at that time I was here, it was in China, the middle of China, and then I relocated here, and then went back to Beijing, and then the food in Beijing is just terrible. It's full of, you know, you don't know what you're eating. I mean, because the food is mostly hot pots, and a hot pot is a stick of things that are stuck on a stick, and you don't know what it is. It could be squid or whatever, but a lot of it's like rabbit brain and monkey brain and things that we don't eat here. So I don't know what I was eating. So, and I got kind of scared, so I didn't eat that much there. But my diet, I've been on this Asian diet for 20 years, and so I haven't been around Western food, although, you know, it's there, you know, with the fast food is everywhere in the world, but I just avoided it. So I was mostly in Thailand and eating a very natural kind of diet. But after my anosmia, I couldn't eat a thing. I was really depressed. I try not to get depressed and try to keep creative, to keep me going. It was difficult. But coming back to America, it's even more difficult because most of the food here is carbohydrates. And I I'm not used to bread and things, heavy foods like that. And also meat has this weird texture. So, you know, it's all about texture with being an osmic, because that is very related to taste. And it's just not friendly. I don't know. So I avoid meat.
I mean, I think it's difficult when you have an osmia to find foods that work well for you.
Right. So I wasn't eating for probably a year, a lot. One meal a day, maybe a sandwich, a cheese sandwich with lots of mayo or something, just to fill me up, and lots of PB&Js, a lot of kids' food. And I haven't had that stuff for years since I was a kid. So it's kind of just it's a quick filler. And then just recently, I just kind of stepped away from that. And I'm all like, that's not going to really help me, but it might help me keep me alive or something, but it's not really going to. Anyway, so I've been trying to research and jump into the natural food stores and seeing what's on sale, and because I'm an artist and also a teacher, I'm on a budget. So I bought an artichoke the other day, and I cooked my first artichoke after, you know, for the longest time. And instead of using what some people use, butter or oil or olive oil or whatever, I kind of mixed up this bowl of mayo and, you know, organic mayo and some, a lot of different like olive oils and olives and feta cheese, and I just kind of made this dip, and it was like, I don't eat chips, and so the dip with the artichoke was perfect, and it was really satisfying. I couldn't taste it, but so I'm trying to experiment more healthy, I guess.
Yeah, it is, like I was saying, it's very difficult, I think, for a lot of people who have anosmia to find foods that are satisfying and healthy for them.
Right, right.
Yeah, so when smell comes up in your daily life, do you take the time to explain to those around you that you can't smell?
It's really interesting question. I hear this a lot, and especially on some of your podcasts, or a lot of them. And you know, I've got to say, it's a hard thing to answer to someone because I'm such an honest person. I just tell them the truth. I'm like, I can't smell. And then they get with the COVID. And they said, oh, you have COVID. And the whole place like hears this. And then everybody runs out the door. So I try to keep calm about that right now because of the pandemic. And but questions don't come up to me. You know, when I'm at a restaurant, I don't eat out, but there's nothing open here, which is also very nice because there isn't a lot of people. It opens and it shuts down again here quite often. They don't know what they're doing or they're testing this. And I do drink beer sometimes, and I have to have like this really heavy, not a dark Irish beer, but a very heavy IPA with very bittery, to just get some sensation. And I have to have beer on draft or a Coke. I don't drink things out of a can or a bottle because there's another thing that when I was in Asia, it was more pleasant to eat with a chopstick than it was with a fork. It just tasted better with a piece of wood than, so this whole thing with drinks and soda pops, and I have to have a fizz, but I can't have plastic against my lips because it just doesn't feel right. I could have a sensation on my lips because I still have that. But so, yeah, I have to have bubbles to keep me kind of stimulated. I don't know. But
I
yeah,
know what you mean. Yeah,
you know,
like
but
enjoying...
they, you know, the bartender or the waitress would ask me, how was your meal? How did it taste? I can't, you know, get into that. So I just
right.
don't. I used to tell them, but then they just don't understand. So, but now with the COVID, I just avoid it because I don't want to scare people. I was in, I couldn't sleep sometimes too. And I was in kind of a 7-Eleven or something here. And I walked in and it was like early in the morning, they open at 7. And so I walk in to get my regular coffee and coffee too. I can't buy Starbucks because I can't enjoy something that's maybe more rich. So I buy the cheap coffee and just to get the caffeine. And I walk in, sometimes I can't sleep at night. And I have this, I tell them, oh, I have COVID insomnia. they freak out. They're all like, oh, I have to add that word insomnia, you know, because I often can't sleep because of the, I don't know, because my symptoms or something sometimes. I don't know.
Yeah, that's an unfortunate symptom.
Yeah.
Not being able to sleep. So another question that I actually like to ask all guests who come on the podcast, and there's no right or wrong answer, I'm just interested to hear what your thoughts are, is do you self-identify as having a disability?
Well, of course. But it's an invisible disability. I mean, it's you know, there's... the physical disabilities that you see in people, you don't know what people have. And I was just thinking about that walking down the street this morning. And it's like, well, in the arts, we don't make judgments against anyone or your art. And so it's a different, that's, I don't know how to elaborate on that one. But.
That's okay. Yeah, I agree. I also... I agree that it is an invisible disability. It's difficult because it's something that you can't physically see.
Right.
So it's hard for a lot of people to understand.
Yeah, you couldn't tell if someone couldn't hear or couldn't speak. I mean, without them kind of communicating, I guess.
Right.
Right.
So what would you like people who do not have anosmia to know about what it's like living with it?
Oh. To keep a chin on your shoulder, you know, smile a lot, keep yourself busy and distracted from not thinking too much about it, I think, because it does kind of pin you down, I guess, in some sense. But also look, talk to people who might have the same things that you have or the same experiences that might be related. Also, you know, there's a lot of resources out there, a lot of help. Yeah, let's see what happens, because I haven't, the one thing I haven't done, and I people talk a lot about smell testing, or, you know, these different senses, but I haven't tried that yet because I can't smell, and I'm kind of afraid to. But so I don't know. I think trying things, I'm going to give it a try, but see what happens.
Yeah, you're talking about smell training, doing like.
Yeah, I can't afford it. I was looking at, I was at Whole Foods. I don't know where to go to get these things, and I was like, oh, they have them there. It's $15 a bottle, and the bottles are like the size of a fingernail polish bottle. So I just can't afford them right now, you know. So I'm gonna wait until I get my grant and maybe use that for part of the process in creating some work too.
Yeah, I think that would be interesting later on to try it. So my next question for you, if you could have a sense of smell again, would you want one?
No. A taste, though. I would like to taste things. But smells, I'm glad I can't smell, because there's so many dogs around our neighborhood, you know?
Yeah, that's interesting.
Also motion sickness. That's why I don't drive or rent a scooter or something, because I get motion sickness. I was going to try a surfboard, but then I'm like afraid to fall down because of the memory of me falling off a, I don't remember, but I did fall off a scooter in China. So it kind of, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, like it's almost like post-traumatic stress from trying again.
Right, yeah.
So that's interesting. You would like your sense of taste back.
Yeah, more so than the sense of smell. Although, you know, doing this research with the history of scent, and the perfume industry, I mean, it's a big industry. I didn't know it was so focused, because it's all about branding, you know. You walk into a place, and whether it smells like coffee, that's, you're going to buy that coffee, you know. So there's all these tricks that departments use, or stores or brands that they use in their environment to trick you to buy something with scents. I found that really interesting, especially with the perfumes. And so, yeah, but perfumes, I can't, pheromones are my those are probably the thing that I would like to have back, to smell a woman or you know, someone, my mother, yeah. Or, you know, my mother. I miss the smell of my grandmother's house. My mother's mother, her house smelled totally different than my father's mother's house. I don't know if it was the environment or the perfume, I can't remember, but it could have been the food that kind of absorbed into that environment. So I kind of missed that too, but pheromones, yeah, would be really interesting to get back. But and that's another kind of topic, because I'm not attracted to people anymore. I mean, I'm attracted visually, like being an artist, I'm attracted to the visual arts. Mm-hmm. color, you know, so I said my other parts of my senses kind of developed more on my, the colors actually got brighter, and my hearing a little bit better than it was, but yeah, I think that's an interesting too.
Yeah, definitely. Do you have anything else that you'd like to share?
Gosh, I have a lot, but I'm going to put a lot of this in some of my research and things on my website. Really would like people to see my work. It's not going to be public yet until October, but maybe I'll throw a few smell wheels up there, some color wheels related to smells through memory or what I'm doing. I think notes, yeah, have people who are anosmic or loss of taste as well, keep notes and walk around, maybe smell mapping, you know, through memory, things like that. Might be interesting to help people.
That is interesting. And then speaking of your art and things like that, how can listeners connect with you online to find your artwork?
Oh, they can find me on my website, and I'm all my other links from that, tobiasfifield.com. And that's it's a Scottish name. I think my family was from five fields in Scotland, and when they immigrated to America, they gave us the name Fifield. They shortened it out.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I'll definitely make sure to include that link in the episode notes, that so listeners can find your information online.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for coming on and speaking with us today. It was nice to hear from you, and it's kind of, I just think it's really cool that you are currently in Hawaii.
I don't know how long, but you know, I came here for a job, and then the university shut down, and they're not going to open until next year. But then, who knows? I mean, I'm still a resident of California. You're not a resident legally in Hawaii until you permanently lived at one place for 1 year and you could prove it. So I'm not there yet. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you to Toby for coming on the podcast and sharing his anosmia story with all of us. If you'd like to check out his artwork, you can visit his website online at www.tobiasfifield.com, and I will make sure to include that in the episode notes as well. If you'd like to get in touch with me, you can email me at thesmellpodcast@gmail.com. You can follow the podcast on social media, on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at The Smell Podcast. You can also find me online at justthesmellpodcast.com. I'm always interested in sharing listener stories. Please rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast if you listen using iTunes. Reviews are helpful because they allow others to find the show. Finally, if you would like to financially support the podcast, you can do so by clicking on the link in the episode description. I appreciate your support. And as always, a big thank you to everyone who currently contributes to the show, because your generosity is what makes the podcast possible. Until next time, have a great day.